Pubcast.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Gender dysphoria describes the sense of dis-ease, I suppose you might say, between how you feel about your gender on the inside versus how it is on the outside, how people see you, how you see yourself, how you are perceived in the world, how you perceive yourself is a big part of it too. And gender dysphoria is something that is very common but not universal among trans people, and is often what ends up guiding us towards transition, guiding us towards finding other ways to express our inner selves outwardly, basically.
Welcome to the Liberated Healer Podcast, where we touch on a variety of topics in the world of spirituality, energetic healing, and everything in between and beyond. Take an adventure on a shooting star with your hosts, Gina and Linnea, offering their wisdom, guidance, and everlasting love and support.
Hi, everybody. My name is Gina Cavalier, and this is the Liberated Healer Podcast. And today we have a lovely special guest, Ariana Serpentine. And hello, nice to have you.
Nice to be here.
Thank you for joining us. I believe you're in Washington, correct?
Yeah, I'm in the Pacific Northwest right now. It's really beautiful weather. It's warm. It's a little bit muggy, but we're having a nice summer up here. So
yeah, I'm in Montana. So
oh, okay, cool.
Yeah. So Ariana, you have written a very special book, The Sacred Gender.
You have a copy. That's so awesome.
Yes. And Llewellyn Publications is a really good partner of mine, and they've been very supportive, and they always send me the most interesting of books to and people to connect with. And as a lot of my listeners know, and the reason why I'm going to do a little bit of a longer intro is because I think this is a very special episode.
Okay.
As well as all of them, but this is something that I've always wanted to know a little bit more about, that I don't feel that I have been very educated. So if I misstep or misspeak, please correct me, because my whole goal is to make everyone feel, you know, equal, loved, welcomed. And, you know, I'm just learning this whole thing. And that's why I'm getting chills just talking about it, because it's so, when I read your book, it really profoundly, and I haven't gotten through all of it, but it really did deeply connect with me. The way that you describe the journey. And the reason why I'm saying that is because when you said that you had a one gender sign over your head that you felt was you, and then everybody else saw the other one, that just lit me up, because thinking of a child having that conflict as a child, as a baby, and then not knowing who or what to talk to. I mean, it's an interesting journey. We all have our own ups and downs and crazy stories that bring us to where we need to go. And I think that you've really done that. So thank you. And please, can you tell us a little bit about yourself and your journey and how you got to the sacred gender?
Well, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for asking. Spiritually, I grew up in one faith, but I became pagan at some point during my teens, exploring different forms of pagan spirituality. And I belonged to witchcraft traditions and different reconstruction and revivalist traditions of different streams of modern paganism, which include things like heathenry, which is Germanic paganism, Irish Reconstruction, and general broad Mediterranean, so, you know, Greek and Italian forms of ancient paganism. I'm drawn to old things, and I'm drawn to ancient writings and ancient forms of spirituality. And so I've had this journey, this spiritual journey over the course of my life. And there are interesting places where it lined up with my journey with regards to gender and presentation and identity. And this book is the child of the places where those two things meet, basically, and have met for me. So I ended up writing it because over the course of time, I'd written blog posts, personal journal entries, had conversations, led talks at points in time, you know, had discussion groups about these exact subjects. And it finally gelled into something that was book-shaped for me. During the this kind of like almost monastic isolation of the pandemic, you know, I spent some time brewing this book. And I'd started writing it a couple of years before that. Because I realized that I had enough material to be more than a blog post, if that makes sense, more than just a video or a conference. But I also, I took a class related to a series of spirits of creativity. And one of the goals of the class was to have a seed afterwards that would grow into something. And this was also the seed from that class, from the Toys and Creation class that my friend Rhea Norix put on. And so it was a conjunction of a bunch of different things that brought it together. I've noticed over the last maybe year, like since I started writing the book, I've noticed more and more people talking about being trans and about being non-binary and stuff in relationship to this, these overlapping communities and scenes of, you know, pagan, witchcraft, spiritual, all of these different groups that have these kind of loose overlaps with one another. And that's really positive. And I just, you know, decided to add my voice to the conversation too, and my own thoughts and experiences also.
I guess that's where the title came from, Sacred Gender, because, you know, this is not new. It's been going on since the dawn of time.
Absolutely.
So sacred to me, you know, was a great title because it just kind of went back and showed that this is like a beautiful thing. And wow. And then talk about a little bit about this, kind of maybe explain for the listeners more on the gender side, non-binary pronoun conversation, if you're comfortable with that.
Oh yeah, sure. Like giving a little 101.
A little 101, because it's always good to get a refresher.
So the word transgender nowadays, and mind you, a lot of these terms change and shift over time. Like these are experiences that humans have always had, but right now we're having like this burst of conversation about it due to the internet and due to people being socially allowed to talk about it in public ways, which isn't something that, you know, depending on the situation, was allowed in our in Western cultures, at least for a long time. Transgender as a general term is being used to mean you are a different gender than the one that you were assigned at birth. You know, at birth, your doctor looks at your body and based on a rough examination of your genitals is like, oh, you're one of those. Which a lot is limiting for a lot of people because a lot of people fall outside of what those categorizations are supposed to mean. So some transgender people cross that binary. You know, transgender breaks down to meaning across the binary as the accompanying word cisgender means on the same side of, or I mean, across the, sorry. Transgender means across gender, cisgender means on the same side. So a cisgender person is like, oh, they called me a girl at birth, and I'm definitely a girl, I agree, on the same side of gender, whereas transgender means, no, that doesn't really fit. And for some trans people, the other one of the two popular binary genders is the one that fits, man or woman. And for some transgender people, none of them fit. And for a lot of us, it's way more complicated. Non-binary means you don't fit into that binary man-woman thing. Like, mm-hmm. if just doesn't sit right with you. Not that it doesn't exist, but that you're not part of it or that's not where you find yourself. And there are a lot of people who identify as non-binary who don't feel the need to change a lot about themselves because it's their understanding of themselves. But for a lot of non-binary people also, that opens the doors to different forms of expression and deeper forms of understanding of oneself. So, and
because when we talk about, I guess it helps. So the non-binary person, you're saying I'm non-binary, it helps people inform people around them that, hey, I don't want to be addressed as either of those two things. I want to just be a soul, a light, or a thing, you know what I mean? And not address, put in one bucket or the other.
Very much so,
people like to put people in buckets, you know, because it makes it feel easier to digest, I would, you know, expect. So, okay.
Yeah, I think that's part of it. Humans love categorization. One of the ways that I approach gender and sacred gender is as a form of categorization. We like having easy ways to categorize people and things because that allows us to make simple snap decisions in the moment. How do I talk to this person? How do I think about this person? What do I expect this person to do? How do I expect this person to behave? But humans aren't that simple. So while we can have these categorizations and these categories and sets, these buckets, honestly, most people don't 100% fit into any one of the big socially acceptable buckets. And yeah, non-binary means, you know, I generally don't fit into either, or I fit into one, but only in a really weird way, you know? So.
Well, I appreciate that. So it's interesting, the biological sex markers that you went through with your study were a part. I'm really interested in hearing some of that feedback on that.
Oh, just, I guess the short version of the story is I signed up for a research study at one point, and my, I had asked ahead of time whether being trans or being on hormone replacement therapy or anything would interfere with the study, and I was told, well, we don't see any reason why it would. But then when it came to checking my blood levels, my blood levels were, for some things, were in a particular range, and that range wasn't the correct range for a male type of person. But, you know, I'd been on hormones for 4 or 5 years now. And one of the doctors on duty is like, well, hormones don't change everything about your body. And I'm like, they do change huge amounts of how your body works. I mean, they're the signal chemicals that change how your cells develop and everything. So after a while, you know, and the punchline for that particular story, or the endpoint for that story, is that, well, they wouldn't accept me for the study because I was off for male levels. In the future, trans people who were on hormone replacement therapy would be treated as the biological sex that hormone therapy was applied to, because obviously it was changing the results. You know, biological sex is made up of a whole bunch of different things, just like gender is made up of a whole bunch of different things. There are a lot of different ways to look at it and a lot of different ways to pull it apart. And when it is said that sex and gender are both socially constructed, what we're talking about is the categories that we use to define these things. You know, the buckets, we make the buckets, but the things that go into the buckets are already there, right? So.
Okay, so I'm really interested in hormone therapy, and I've always wanted to ask somebody who's on this, because, you know, I struggled with my female anatomy, just because I had tubular pregnancies and, really bad periods. And now I'm actually kind of going through menopause already. It's just like a never ending story of, you know, hot flashes now and all kinds of crazy stuff. Do you get that level of ups and downs? You get that kind of level of change when you take those medications?
I mean, it's just like you're on the different set, right? Roughly half of the human population is on one set of hormones and roughly half is on the other. And so your body just pretty much reacts as though it's on the set that you're giving it. Testosterone's especially tenacious. So a lot of trans feminine people take hormone blockers unless they've had surgery that remove the sources, the main sources of testosterone. Everybody's got some of both. Like, you know, it's not healthy if you don't have a little bit of testosterone or a little bit of estrogen in your body.
Yeah.
But it's just which is more dominant affects a huge amount of things. And yeah, hormone therapy affects mood. It affects your body goes through a monthly cycle, even though you don't have all of the organs that are associated with it, because a lot of that happens in your hypothalamus. And is your hypothalamus reacting to the hormones that are given to you? And it eventually can have effects on your anatomy, or it does have effects on your anatomy over time. Things change, your body tries to reshape itself, and well, does reshape itself. So but it does affect emotions, and this isn't one for one. Like, everybody's got different experiences, but frequently folks who weren't on estrogen who end up going on estrogen experience a different range of emotions than they had before. And in another direction, you know, I had a friend who went on testosterone. He was transmasculine, and you know, he said, "I finally got to stop crying all the time. It was so
that's what I was saying. Is like, wow, you know, somebody wouldn't be on this journey and go through all of that if it wasn't that deep and important to them. You know, I mean, that's kind of where I'm trying to get to, is that, you know, you're making sacrifices just doing the hormone therapy to get to where you want to go, because you know, finding that balance, you know, I'm sure there was a lot of like having to take blood tests and kind of trying to figure out what the balance is. And it's, you know, something that people need to be a little bit more, you know, compassionate and aware that we're all kind of, you know, in a interesting balance. And, you know, compassion is kind of my go-to thing, you know, that I always so then your paganism, you know, was that, did you lean into that because it was a little bit more accepting? I'm just, you know, or is that just something completely separate? I'm just wondering how it kind of played with your story.
You know, the thing is that, and I do bring it up a little bit in the book too, is that paganism isn't necessarily more accepting of trans people. First off, paganism is a bunch of different like traditions and stuff like that, just to be clear on that for everyone listening. But by and large, pagan spaces and traditions aren't necessarily always more accepting, because their subcultures are a small slice of the overculture, and they often have the same problems that the overculture has, just in different mixes and proportions, basically.
Okay.
So, things that trans people, you know, have faced before is like, you know, going to groups and being told, you know, well, you have masculine energy or you have feminine energy, regardless of what you say your gender is. So you can't be in this group, or you can't stand in this place in the circle, or things like that, you know, as well as like the garden variety transphobia that happens just pretty much anywhere. But especially, you know, like, anyway, so that wasn't the reason that I leaned into paganism specifically, but there was a mystical internal life that allowed me to explore and understand myself better that I wasn't finding in other mainstream religions. And that definitely did touch on gender for me, because there is such a powerful current of the sacred feminine, or finding the concept of the feminine, finding the concept of the sacred in the feminine, especially in modern paganism, kind of in reaction to people being told that God is a man for so long, you know? But the problem is,
I used to get God and Santa Claus confused when I was young, you know?
I can see that.
You know, and I just thought it was really interesting that it was always just this, like, you know, and as I got older, I was like, this smells funny. But anyways.
So yeah, I was internally aligned with the feminine, and seeing the sacred feminine being celebrated meant something to me. So there, it definitely did affect me in that way and connect to me in that way. And there are other options, other religions where that happens, but these were the sets of religions that I was exposed to. But then I started to read and research more, and I found so many ways that the experience of trans and non-binary people have been involved in pagan religions in the past. And in many of the societies that had them were, you know, celebrated and honored and understood as part of the natural fabric of humanity in the world. You have the trans priestesses of the Great Mother Goddess, the Gali priestesses. You have the Inari priestesses of the, so yeah, there's a theme, like we often end up being spirit workers or you know, clergy in places and times too. But the Inari were the Scythian gender interesting clergy. That even extends to some groups nowadays that have ancestry in those groups, but there was more of a play. And then I started finding it in mythology too. You know, there are so many deities for whom gender is a question mark or who seem to be situationally gendered. And that makes sense because gender is something that we do for humans that doesn't necessarily apply to the constellations of consciousness that are the gods, you know? So, or if they apply, then they're a way of looking at them or a way of relating to them, but does not an intrinsic quality that necessarily says that this is what the being is, rather this is how we perceive and interact with them.
Yeah, I definitely see your Dionysus, is it Dionysus?
Uh-huh.
The Liberator. I love the name, yeah. Liberator, right?
Oh yeah, you're the Liberated Healer, yeah.
Well, you know, just to go back, and people have asked me about this. So you're the Liberated Healer. And I'm just like, no, that's not the whole concept. The concept is that everybody can find liberation and healing themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not like the Liberated Healer. I try to correct that because people are saying, oh, you're calling yourself that, like it's kind of egotistical. And I'm like, no, that's not kind of the whole idea of it. I really, as you were kind of speaking, I kind of was seeing you channel a little bit. And I definitely see you connecting to Dionysus, the energy. I definitely kind of saw, because I can read energy, and I definitely saw it around you, and that you have a very unique soul that came into this life to write this, to express this, to go through this journey, to help others, you know. And I just definitely see like a lot of past lives from kind of like coming up behind you. And I can see that you've done this before. And that's why Dionysus, because that's like sort of a non-gender deity, correct?
Well, he's one who gender is complicated for. So yeah, definitely.
Well, that's interesting. I've been really connected to Freya lately.
Mm-hmm.
From another reading or experience that I had. And I just moved up to Montana 4 months ago. And it was so weird because she's like the Nordic, you know, goddess and things like that, and bringing in the warrior spirit. And I never had any connection with her until I moved up here. And it was almost instant. So I was like, wow, this is really crazy. Fantastic. So
yeah, always glad to hear about more Freya.
Yeah, she's so beautiful. So you also talk about gender dysmorphia and gender euphoria. Can you explain a little bit about that?
Yeah, gender dysphoria and euphoria are, gender euphoria is a more modern term, or well, they're both modern terms, but gender dysphoria describes the sense of dis-ease, I suppose you might say, between how you feel about your gender on the inside versus how it is on the outside, how people see you, how you see yourself, how you are perceived in the world, how you perceive yourself is a big part of it too. And gender dysphoria is something that is very common but not universal among trans people, and is often what ends up guiding us towards transition, guiding us towards finding other ways to express our inner selves outwardly, basically. Not everyone has or experiences dysphoria, and it is different for everybody. Some people just experience euphoria, which is the flip side of the term, which is that feeling when people get it right, or when things are right. The feeling when you look in yourself in the mirror and you, there's a difference between looking at yourself in the mirror and being self-critical, which everyone is, and looking at yourself in the mirror and being like, there's something wrong with that body. Like, this isn't my body. You know, and that's really, in a lot of ways, or this isn't how my body should be, you know. That's more dysphoria, and euphoria is looking in that mirror and getting that feeling, or is, you know, being addressed properly and getting that feeling of, oh, somebody sees me, finally, somebody gets it, you know, I'm being understood, I'm being received, you know, I'm being witnessed. Like, so many trans people go through life not being seen as who they are. And so there is a powerful and wonderful feeling of alignment. And I feel that there's something spiritually deep in that sense of alignment too, because conceptually, I think that gender is like a pair of clothes. It's like a category. It's something that we put over a set of characteristics. And if you are wearing the wrong gender, if you're putting on the wrong set of characteristics, it's going to abrade your inner self. It's going to chafe. Right. And then when you're in the right place, and when you're in your right place and you're being seen and understood, and you are as you think you should be, there's a deep power to that. That's actualization. That's a form of actualization. And trans people often have particular sets of paths towards that actualization. But I think it's the flip side. It's where gender euphoria leads. And a lot of times when transgender folks finally, you know, are able to come out and are able to start being themselves, a lot of other problems in their lives end up resolving themselves, because those problems, I feel, you know, if we want to speak on a spiritual level, they come from a form of spiritual blockage. But, you know, they also have emotional and psychological components as well. So,
I mean, I just think that this is so important, because every day a child is born in this world that is going to experience this.
Yeah.
And if we can make it a little bit more open and available to them, to where, you know, we can help them with at the earliest possible age, not feel shame and feel protected and feel that they can be themselves, they're going to have a lot better journey. And as a whole, humanity is just going to be better.
Yeah, exactly. You know?
And that's sort of, we have to fight for that. We have to. That's why these books and this effort is really important, and why I think that you were strong enough, obviously, to be able to, you know, go through this and to come out on the other side healthy, in a healthy way. I know it was, I'm sure, lots of different struggles, because life, gosh darn it, can be hard.
It is, yeah.
All of us. I don't care who it is. I always remind people that, because it doesn't matter who you see on the television or on Instagram or whatever, like, everybody has a certain different struggle, and pulling away from the judgments and letting, try to just let people be who they want to be, and it makes it easy for everybody, you know?
It does. Yeah. The rising tide raises all ships, right? You know, and another thing that I point out in the book, and another thing that I learned partly by studying ancient forms of paganism, was that the attitude our modern culture has towards trans people, this kind of negative and fearful attitude, isn't the norm for humanity. Like, this is a new thing. This is spread relatively recently, you know, over the last millennia or so, with certain aspects of culture. And it's something that, as not being the norm of humanity, it means that someday it's not going to be like this too, you know? And we need to work towards that, because exactly as you said, you know, I mean, trans people are humans too, and we're part of the human race. And so our well-being reflects what's going on with other people around us. And being allowed to explore your gender, whether you end up deciding that you're trans or not, being allowed to explore your gender is a journey. You know, and it's a journey that anybody should be okay, like, people should be okay with people taking it, with seeing, does this fit for me? Does this work for me? Am I this kind of person or that kind of person? Not everybody's going to need to take the journey, and not everybody's going to want to, but I think it should be available for anybody who wants to, because I think when we understand ourselves, again, it's actualization. When we understand ourselves and connect to those deeper part of ourselves and get to bring those parts out, everyone benefits for it.
And we're born into a certain family or environment, and then that environment might not talk about this or even accept this. So having these discussions and books and is important for, you know, all of us to be educated outside of our original, where we, you know, were brought into this place. And I say that because when I was younger, I was raised in Scottsdale, Arizona in the 70s. So, you know, certain things that they have today, they didn't have back then, mm-hmm. including sushi. I always laugh. I was like, we didn't have sushi. I didn't know what it was until I moved to California. But we never really talked about this stuff. And then when I moved to California, it was kind of everywhere. And I just remember being lucky. I'm sort of a curious George, and I had the natural effects of just accepting people because mm-hmm. that's who I was. But I honestly could not believe that I did not, you know, have that experience until I moved to California. So I think, you know, it was just kind of shocking to me to be like, wow, was I under a rock or something like that?
Right.
So,
yeah.
But it was my circle that I was in, you know? Mm-hmm. And so that's why I think this is really important, because, hey, somebody might be reaching and then they're looking and they say, oh, there's someone like me that I can, you know, see that they came through on the other side and came through strong. Mm-hmm. And so that's why I just really find this very important.
Thank you. Yeah.
And how would you say that society or community can maybe do better to be supportive?
Listen to us. We understand what's going on with us. Even if we end up changing our minds, it's because there's something that's going on inside us that we have to work through, right? You know, it's not... acknowledge and understand that experimenting with different forms of gender presentation, with different kinds of clothes, with different kinds of behavior, with different forms of medical therapies, all of these things are things that aren't harmful, that and most of them are things that you can, you know, put back down if that's what the answer comes to. But more often than not, if somebody is, you know, experimenting with trying different presentations and things like that, it's because they need to. It's part of them and it's part of their journey. And there's nothing that's harmful in that. It's not going to hurt anybody to let people be themselves. And that applies to transgender people, you know, binary and non-binary, and it applies to cisgender people, so it applies to all people. But, you know, to do better for trans folks, listen to us when we're talking about ourselves and our experiences, and listen to us when we're explaining that something's harmful. Like, there can be a knee-jerk reaction of, that can't be harmful because it's not harming me. But like, we have to step out of ourselves, and that's empathy, you know, is being able to step out of ourselves and try and see things from another person's position. And you don't even need to understand it, something to respect it also. That's another key point, is just, if you can't wrap your head around it, know that somebody's going through something, and this is, they're telling you, they're giving you the words to support them with. And that's the most baseline thing, is listen to us when we're talking about our own experiences with these things. So.
And I like that you said, even if we change our mind, I get really frustrated when people are like, well, you said this and now you're saying this. It's like, well, I got educated and now my mind has changed a little. I mean, that's also what drives me crazy about politics. We don't really talk about politics here, but when they're like, well, here's one day they were like this and now they were like that. It was like, well, thank goodness. Maybe they got some education and they changed their mind. Hello. That is so awesome.
Yeah,
so
people definitely change and evolve. So.
It's just so funny. Well, I want to just do a little of, on page 61, you have a Talking to the Stars basic ancestor practice.
Yes.
And do you want to read us a little bit, kind of starting from the meditation, like where it says go outside.
I can do that. Take us there
and take us out with a little bit of an exercise.
So this is a simple practice for connecting with the dead, with your ancestors, with those who have gone before and who are no longer with us, but have affected us in some way, whether they're blood ancestors of yours or just somebody who was very meaningful to you and affected your life. Even if you don't know their name, you can do this practice. You go outside on a night when you can see the stars. Take a good look at the sky and get a feel for the stars around you. Think about a person who's passed on that you wish you could talk to right now. Then you pick a star, pick any star. It doesn't matter if you forget which star it is. It doesn't matter for the purpose of this practice if the star already has another name or another significance, just pick a star. While you're looking at that star, start saying the things to the deceased person that you want to speak to. Pour your heart out to them. Share what you want to say to them. Treat the star as though it is that person, just for this moment, just for the purpose of having somewhere sacred to direct your prayers. Once you're done listening to that person, or once you're done talking to that person, take a pause, breathe, listen, think, and see if you get any impressions or feelings you didn't before. You aren't wrong if you don't. That's not the purpose of the exercise. Here, we're just reaching out. Then think of another person who's passed on that you wish you could communicate with. Pick another star. If there are a lot of stars and you pick the same one by accident, it's okay, really. Seriously, don't worry about that. Just pick one, call it by that person's name, talk to it, and listen. And that's it, that's all. We're just here to start. We don't need to do anything complicated or fancy. Ancestor work at its base does not need to be complicated or fancy. By connecting with the dead, you are engaging with your human birthright and bridging the gap between now and eternity, between you and greater things, and between the living and the dead.
Very nice. I really feel that vibration. And I just want to send everybody a great big out there hug and compassionate, empathetic. Thank you, Ariana Serpentine, for your journey. And it was lovely to meet you and the sacred gender. Woo-hoo-hoo.
It was great talking to you. Thanks for having me on here.
Yes, we'll link everything on the down below.
Perfect.
Thank you.
Thank you.
If you enjoyed this episode, you can find us online at theliberatedhealer.com, on Instagram at Liberated Healer Podcast, or on Facebook at The Liberated Healer. Give us a follow, subscribe, send us a message if you so feel, and thank you for your support. Podcast.